Chapter 12. The damage looks much worse from out here, C-3PO said, staring up at the belly of Millennium Falcon from the foot of the landing ramp. Han glared at him from under the ship, where he, Leia, and a Kalula Station mechanic were compiling a list of needed repairs. Who asked you, 3PO? The protocol droid adopted a posture of inquisitiveness. No one, Captain Solo. I was only remarking. 3PO, Leia cut him off. That's enough for now. Of course, Princess Leia. I know when I'm not wanted. That'll be the day, Han said. Kraken, Paige, and the rest of the rescued officers were standing off to one side, fielding questions from several other Kalula mechanics who had dropped what they were doing to surround the Falcon the moment she had settled on her landing discs. The ship was blistered, dented, and punctured. She's a storyboard for the whole war, the mechanic said. Han nodded. You got that right. The mechanic wedged his forefinger into a hole in the underside of the outrigger cockpit. I'll bet this one's not half a meter from the pilot's chair. Han swallowed audibly. I've had closer calls. Leia glanced at the mechanic. You might have heard, he's a regular moving target. The mechanic grinned and clapped grit from his hands. Well, she's taken a bruising, but I figure she'll live. It's just a matter of pulling together replacement parts. Han looked relieved. He had his mouth open to thank the mechanic when a tall, purple-complected humanoid wearing military utilities approached him. Welcome aboard Kalula Station, Captain Solo. Before Han could reply, a silver-haired human officer stepped in and saluted him. Captain Solo, sir, I was with you at Endor. Han thought for a moment. Denev, right? The man beamed. I'm proud that you remember me, sir. Likewise, Captain. Leia folded her arms across her chest and stared at Han. That's the 10th person who's recognized you. What is this, a gathering of your fan club? Han frowned at her. Very funny. No, really, Han. Maybe you should have become an actor instead of a war hero. Just think of the following you'd have. Han grabbed hold of his own chin. You'd pay good credits to see this face blown up 100 times normal size? Leia pretended to think about it. When you put it that way... Captain Solo, someone said. Walking briskly toward the Falcon was a portly but energetic human major general. Base Commander Garay, the man said, extending his hand to Han. Han shook hands and gestured to C-3PO and Leia. Our droid, and my wife, Leia Organa Solo. Leia elbowed him gently in the ribs. Thanks for second billing, darling, she said, through a clenched-jawed smile. Han caressed his ribs and eyed Leia. The droid's generally well-behaved. He indicated Paige, Kraken, and some of the others, introducing them by name. Garay nodded his head several times. Glad to meet all of you. His gray eyes returned to Han. Captain Solo, please tell me Mon Cal Command sent you. Han compressed his lips. Wish I could, Commander. The truth is, we got hit hard during a rescue mission at Selvaris, and Kalula was the only place the Falcon could go. Garay's obvious disappointment was fleeting. We're proud to have you on board regardless, all of you. He turned to his even more portly adjutant. Chief, see that Captain Solo's passengers are treated for injuries and well-fed. The adjutant saluted. If you follow me, sirs, he said to Kraken and the others. Han kept silent until everyone had moved off. What's the situation here, Commander? Garay tilted his head to one side. Take a walk with me and I'll explain. He led Han, Leia, and C-3PO on a slow tour of the docking bay, in the strobing light of arc welders, past technicians and soldiers who looked every bit as scarred and patched up as the ships they were working on. Humans appeared to comprise the majority of Kalula's personnel, but mixed among them were Brigians, Triani, Bims, Tamarians, and other species from star systems proximal to Kalula. Nearly every individual and craft reflected the war's years of savagery, Some of the ships combined so many disparate parts, they were unrecognizable. The Yuuzhan Vong showed up about a month ago, Garay was saying, and it's been steady fighting ever since. Our defense platform is history. And for the past local week, we've been under constant siege. But it's become clear that the Vong want to occupy Kalula rather than raise it, or they'd have dropped a moon on it or poisoned it like they've done elsewhere. Occupation seems a good guess, Leia said. One of the ships we saw on our way in is a Yamask vessel. Garay nodded. That's already been verified. Still, it's curious that the Yuuzhan Vong would choose Kalula, Leia went on. I don't know a great deal about the Tyan hegemony, but I do know it lacks most of the resources that Yuuzhan Vong usually come looking for. No argument, Princess. Kalula's mostly been a haven for scientists, because of some sort of natural phenomenon that occurs down there every so often. Our best guess is that the Yuuzhan Vong want to use Kalula as an entry point into the Tyan hegemony and the corporate sector. Then there's the shipyards at Liana, though they haven't been turning out much since Sinar Systems pulled up stakes. Garay took his lower lip between his teeth and shook his head in exasperation. But the Vong have to go through us to get there. And, thank the Force, that hasn't happened yet. If they're looking at occupying the rest of the Tyan hegemony, they'd have concentrated their efforts at Liana, Han said. For one thing, it's closer to the Perlemian, which they pretty much control anyway, from Coruscant to the Kron Drift. He shook his head. They've got something else in mind. Maybe using Kalula as a staging area for an attack on Mon Calamari. We consider that, Garay said, but I don't have to tell you that Kalula's well removed from the easy space lanes. Mon Calamari's 3 micro-jumps direct, or you return to the Perlemian by way of Delalt and Liana, which takes just as long. So what do the Yuuzhan Vong want with Kalula? Leia asked. Garay looked at her while they walked. Captives. The Vong commander of the battle group even intimated as much. You've actually spoken to him? Tattooed head to toe, Garay said, and soon to be black with blood if we have anything to say about it. He promised us noble deaths and everlasting life. Tough offer to turn down, Han said. Garay snorted. Personally, I'll take the here and now. Where are you from, Commander? Leia asked. Abrogato Re. Han was surprised. You're a long way from the core. Why'd you leave? It was raining Vong fireballs, and I started to feel like I was in the way. Leia nodded contemplatively. There's no safe corner left. Garay sighed with her. Not if the Yuuzhan Vong have their way. One more major push from them at this point. Well, who can predict how things will turn out, right? Expect surprises, Han said. There's a small resistance force operating downside on Kalula, but if this station falls, I don't see how they'll be able to hold out against a full-scale invasion. Just how bad off are you? Leia said. Well, you've seen our starfighters. They're held together with spit and glue, just like we are. Ever since the Holonet went down, we've had to rely on courier communication with Mon Cal, and that takes anywhere from 3 to 5 local days. In fact, we dispatched a ship just hours before you arrived. Galactic Alliance Command hasn't been able to spare us any materiel in any event. So we're critically short on food, munitions, spare parts, BACTA. Many of the volunteers who came to our support are wounded. We've a lot of sick and dying. Garay paused, becoming more somber by the moment. I've been fighting the Yuuzhan Vong for 4 years. I feel like I was a lot younger when this war started. We all were, Commander, Han said. He recognized Garay's type, done in by years of command, of sending soldiers to their deaths, a man who no longer needed to prove to himself that he was a hero. He was just doing his job and hating himself for it. Garay forced himself to brighten. But don't worry, we'll get the Falcon repaired and we'll have you on your way in no time. We don't want to take your personnel away from their jobs, Commander, Han said firmly. Leia and I will see to the repairs ourselves. He paused, then added, Between you and me, Gary, if Kraken and the rest weren't expected on Mon Calamari, we'd be staying behind to help you. Gary smiled. I appreciate that, Solo. Reinforces everything I've heard about you all these years. He glanced at Leia.
Will the two of you join me for lunch?
We'd be honored, Leia said. She deliberately fell behind Han to whisper, Everything he's heard all these years. One day they're going to build a statue of you. Han gestured broadly. These are the people who deserve statues. Every last one of them. They continued to walk and talk and bump into people who knew or recognized Han and Leia. Kaluda seemed to have drawn every celebrated soldier, mercenary, and ne'er-do-well from within 1,000 parsecs. Commander Garay excused himself to attend to business, but promised he'd rendezvous with them in the mess hall. They were emerging from one of the transparent connectors that linked the station's separate modules when Han heard what he thought was a familiar voice. The source of the voice was a dark-haired man as old as himself, dressed in a worn gray flight suit that was cinched at the waist by a broad red belt. Of medium height but broad-chested, he was sitting cross-legged atop a cargo crate in a murky area of the module, between a golden-furred Bothan and a tall Calabop whose wings were folded behind him. Surrounding the trio stood roguish-looking human and alien warriors in similar gray flight suits, who might have made up a separate starfighter squadron or just as easily a criminal swoop gang from Nar Shaddaa.
"Another fan?" Leia asked.
Han rubbed his stubbled jaw. "I definitely know the voice from somewhere, but I can't place the face."
"So ask him."
Han nodded and sauntered over to the soldiers, every one of whom monitored his approach with a mix of amusement and wariness. "I'm Han Solo. Am I right that we've met?" The man looked at him askance, almost as if to display the ragged scars on the side of his furrowed and somewhat dark-complected face.
"Not in the flesh, Captain, though we have come close. I guess that means that we're not entirely strangers."
He extended a meaty hand. "Hearn." Han tried out the name twice, then shook his head.
"Doesn't ring a bell. But you're sure we never served together? During the rebellion, maybe?"
Hearn shrugged.
"I've one of those faces that used to appear familiar to everyone."
Han caressed his jaw. "Ever been to Del Alt?"
"Don't think so."
Han nodded uncertainly, then tipped his head in parting and walked away. Leia waited until she, Han, and C-3PO were out of earshot of the group to ask,
"Did he mean familiar before the rebellion, or before all the scars?"
Han glanced over his shoulder and shook his head in ignorance. But any response was drowned out by the sudden blare of klaxons. Instantly, the station was thrown into managed chaos. Everyone knew precisely where to report and what to do, except Han, Leia, and C-3PO, who weren't sure whether they should go to the nearest battle station or simply stay out of everyone's way. Appearing out of nowhere, Garay put a quick end to their confusion. "Enemy reinforcements have arrived, another entire battle group." Leia was astonished.
"They must be desperate to have Kaluuya to spare so many ships."
Garay agreed. "Our shield should hold." The commander's adjutant came running to report that the station's long-range scanners had zeroed in on something unusual. Garay led everyone to the nearest display screen, on which the adjutant called up a holocam view of what looked to be a colossal space slug, with a wedge-shaped head, a dorsal pouch, and a mouth that had to be 80 meters wide. Garay narrowed his eyes to slits.
"What in the galaxy am I looking at?"
Leia loosed a troubled exhalation.
"That, Commander, is what the Yuuzhan Vong call an Ichna. The one they deployed at Duro practically ate an orbital city."
Garay stared at her, scarcely able to speak. The klaxons began to trumpet a more dire alert.
"Commander," an ensign said, "enemy vessels on the attack."
Han looked at Leia. "Guess we will be hanging around after all."
studious person that you are, or at least claim to be, you no doubt took to heart the Supreme Overlord's admonition that nothing untoward should interfere with the coming sacrifice, High Prefect Drothul Hector Nomanor, given especially the diminished number of victims. Former prefect of the world ship Harla, Drothul had a wide and broad-browed face, sufficiently scarified to demonstrate his allegiance to the gods, but not so much that the scars marred what Drothul considered handsome features. He had kept Nomanor waiting for half a local day while the sun climbed high into the sky, making the rainbow bridge shine like a jeweled necklace. His windowed and drizzle-topped quarters in the prefectory overlooked the place of hierarchy, south of the citadel, in the district once known as Kalakur Heights. Nomanor still remembered the heights from one of the first of his reconnaissance missions, when the market area had teemed with pushy survey takers and blazed with flashing musical advertisement screens. Free product samples delivered from worlds throughout the galaxy had been on continual display, floating on repulsor carts and wafting wonderful aromas into the air. "I took the Supreme Overlord's admonition to heart," Nomanor said from the exquisitely woven Voruk floor mat to which he had been shown by Drothul's attendants. The High Prefect himself spoke from a pillowed recess in his dais. "Then you'll be interested to know it has reached my attention that a coalition of shamed ones is intent on disturbing the ceremony." Drothul fixed Nomanor with a gimlet stare. "I think you are not entirely untutored in the tactics of the heretics, Prefect." "I profess to know something of them." Drothul was clearly entertained by the response. "You give yourself too little credit. Such self-effacement is not becoming to one who has managed to escalate himself from mere executor to prefect of Yuuzhan Tar in so short a time, who, on at least two occasions now, has enjoyed private audience with the Supreme Overlord, who, I would risk saying, even has Shimra's ear." Nomanor feigned a short laugh. "Hardly his ear, High Prefect." Drothul scrutinized him some more. "However did this come about?" he asked, as if to himself. "Was it not Nomanor who sent the priestess Aelan to her death? Who created the bumbling peace brigade? Who helped engineer the disastrous assault on Fondor? Who allowed the traitor Vergere to escape? Who has disguised himself as a human, a Duros, a Given, and who knows how many other species is rumored to have refused a duel with a Jedi and to have murdered his own operatives with an infidel's weapon, who all but lured Warmaster Savong La to dishonor at Ebak 9. He paused briefly. "Look how his Plearian bowl stares at me, so eager to spit venom." "You must understand, High Prefect." Nomanor touched the artificial orb that substituted for an eye. "Just a particle of sand lodged in the corner. In fact, you have succeeded brilliantly in disparaging me, but you neglect to add that there has been a bright side to all those events. Or else," he grinned faintly, "how is it I have come to wear the green robes of high office?" Drothul was infuriated. "The sole reason I tolerate your presence and your escalation is that you are known to have been in the company of my predecessor, Yug Skell, when he died. I know in my heart that you had something to do with his death, and were it not for his death, I would probably not be sitting here delighting in rebuking you." Nomanor inclined his head. "I exist but to serve, High Prefect." "Precisely. Which is why I command you to root out this coalition of shamed ones, and either talk some sense into them or have them killed. I would prefer the former, since I suspect that additional killings at this point will only incite them further. But know that I plan to hold you personally responsible for any interference at the sacrifice, just as Shimra will me. Do you trust that I speak from the heart? Or do I need to bolster my words with threats of what will befall you should you fail me?" "I will do my best, High Prefect." "Your tricks bear watching, Nomanor. This has always been so. I trick no one but myself, High Prefect, by imagining myself more than I am.
Nomanor had had his consuls arrange for a saddled bishop to carry him back to the spacious residence that came with his new status. But for all that he had received, he had earned the envy, anger, and distrust of many, as was frequently the case with those escalated because of actions that needed to remain secret and undisclosed. Others in Shimra's close company suffered similar indignities, in part because Shimra was fickle and full of contradictions, as if jerked this way and that by his emotions or what passed for revelations from the gods. Even mighty Nas Choka was not immune to petty jealousies, which is why he had tripled his complement of bodyguards, something Nomanor had considered doing but ultimately rejected. There was small advantage in announcing one's apprehensions to one's adversaries. But how to keep those apprehensions concealed from the heretics? He had mistakenly believed that the abrupt disappearance of Yusha, the prophet, would have weakened the movement. Instead, Nomanor had only provided his gullible audience with a martyr, more so because many believed that Yusha had been put to death on orders of Shimra. Tucked away in his residence was the original Uglith cloaker Nomanor had worn when exhorting his followers to rise up against the system that had doomed them to become outsiders, a system that perpetuated a belief in gods who would deliberately shun their creations. It would be a different matter if every shamed one was guilty of overreaching or pride, but in fact no one could explain, the Shapers least of all, why implants were rejected. As a result, however, countless individuals were left wondering for the rest of their miserable lives where they had erred, when they had displayed pride, or if they were paying for the transgressions of other creche or domain members. The elite pretended sympathy, when in fact they fairly luxuriated in witnessing their competitors fall from grace. How grievous what befell Consul Shal Tor at the last escalation. But how happy I am that it wasn't me. Only a short time ago, before his life-turning decision on Zonama Seacoat, Nome Anor, sufficiently inflamed by the inequity, had wished to see his entire culture tumble down, to see Shimra shaken from his polyped throne by the debased members of Yuuzhan Vong society. And he had very nearly succeeded. What might have come from that was unclear. If the war were lost, what would it mean for Nomanor, since, save for the Jedi, the inhabitants of the galaxy the Yuuzhan Vong had invaded were not above barbarity? Flight, imprisonment, execution. He couldn't take the chance. Now the very movement born of rumors escaped from distant Yavin, and given order and embellishment by Nomanor himself, threatened to deprive him of all that he had achieved by opting to foil Zonama Seacoat, and thereby reinstate himself in Shimra's good graces. The thought weighed on him as his living transport lumbered past the place of sacrifice, where priests and savants, adepts and initiates were busy preparing for the coming ceremony. Past the shell-like shops of workers, and past solitary shamed ones in their threadbare garments begging for alms. Before Nas Choka had been escalated, he had had occasion to reproach Nomanor for pride, and counsel him look to Yun Shuno, god of the shamed ones, for pardon. All these years later, here he was their prophet.